We're continuing our series on Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. And we were up to the end of the fourth chapter. And that's where we left off two semesters ago. Last semester we had a separate series. Now we're going back to Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. Hu haya omer. We're continuing with quotes from Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. He used to frequently say, and this is the concluding Mishnah of the chapter, and this Mishnah has many, many thoughts. We'll first read the Mishnah and run through the Mishnah, and then review it, analyzing the different components of the Mishnah. So Rabbi Elazar HaKapar used to say, Hayilodim lamut. Anyone who was born is on his way to die. Ve'ametim, and anyone who's dead, Lechayot, is on his way to be resurrected. Vehachayim, and those that are alive, Lidon, they're all headed to judgment day. Sentence number one. From the minute he's born, he's headed to death. From the minute he's dead, he's headed to life. And so long as he's living, he's headed to judgment. That's sentence number one. Next sentence. Leida lehodia ulehivada seems to be very poetic. To know, to make known to others, and to clarify to oneself the following thought: Shehu, that he, blessed be he, El is the potent one. Hu hayotzer, he fashioned. Hu habore, he created. Hu hamevin, and he understands. So all that we're saying now, every person should know and make known and clarify to himself that he is the potent one who fashioned and created and understands. Hu hadayan, he is the judge. Now we see the connection to the previous line. He is the judge. Hu ed, and the witness. Hu ba'aldin, and he's the one standing opposite us in court. What's that called? The plaintiff? One who's standing opposite him in court. Vehu atid ladun. And ultimately, he will judge. He's not only the judge, but he will judge. So that's the second thought. Every person should know and make known and clarify to himself that he is potent, the creator, who fashioned, who understands, who is the judge, who is the witness, who is the plaintiff, who is going to judge. So that's thought number two. Thought number three, Baruch Hu, blessed is he, she'en lefanav, lo avla ve'lo shikha ve'lo masa panim. He doesn't cheat. Everything God does is fair. He doesn't forget, and he doesn't play favorites, ve'lo mikach shochad, nor does he take bribes. She'akol shelo, because he has everything. Everything's his. So that's point number two. Blessed is he that he is completely fair. And he's not going to forget anything. Point number four, Vida. I want you to know, Shakol lefi hachashbon. Everything that's coming in that judgment day is based on an exacting calculation. And don't let your inclinations promise you or mislead you that you'll find an escape in perdition. It doesn't work that way. Anyone that gets judged to perdition is going to pay his dues. I'll prove it, he ends, and this is the conclusion of the Mishnah and the conclusion of the chapter. Shal kochacha ata notzar. You think you control anything? When you were created, suddenly, bam, there's a zygote, there's a fertilized egg, there's a baby. Did anyone ask you? Whether you like it or not, you were created. And suddenly contractions start, the water breaks, the contractions speed up, and boom, there's a baby. No one asked you, you're born. And even if a person sometimes wishes life would end, the heart keeps ticking, no one asks him. And when the time comes to die, well, that happens whether you like it or not.
ועל כוחך אתה עתיד ליתן דין וחשבון לפני מלך מלכי המלכים הקדוש ברוך הוא.
So if you see everything else is done, whether you like it or not, you should also realize that Judgment Day happens and a person will have to give an accounting before the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He. So let's recap the Mishnah. Okay? Point number one was those born are headed to die, those dead are headed to living, and everyone's headed to Judgment Day. That's number one. Number two, you should know and teach and recognize yourself that He is the one who is the judge. He cares. He is potent. He created. He fashioned. He understands. He's standing opposite you in court and He's going to judge. Point number three, blessed is he that his judgment is fear. No bribes and no favorites. Point number four, everything is calculated. And point number five, there's no escape. You see, he does whatever he wants, whether we like it or not. So the general idea is he's running the show. And it would seem like that's an obvious point, but it's not. It's not. The guy is standing, yelling at his wife. And he turns around and he sees me standing there. He says, "Oh, Rabbi, I'm sorry, I didn't see you were there." Okay, what difference does it make that I'm there? She's there. That makes a difference. Ah, I understand him. I probably, you know, I had a student from the Machon who was getting married and he wanted to rent an apartment one flight up from me. So I told him I don't recommend it. So he said, "Why not?" I said, "Because when you and your wife are yelling at one another, you don't have to think I'm hearing it. You know, like, go two blocks down. I don't mind, but you'll mind. But maybe it's good. Maybe you should have rented the apartment by me, right?" So our behavior in life and our behavior in the home would be totally different if we took this Mishnah to heart. Hashem is here. Hashem is there. Hashem is truly everywhere. Yeah, it's true. But it's a hard thought. It's difficult to think that way. But let's begin and let's break down the Mishnah. What happens when a baby's born? We see a future. We see innocence. We can only imagine what life has in store for this brand new baby. Everything's new. You see a baby, how they purr and they start experimenting with sounds. They lie there in bed and ma, 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 ma. And they get a kick out of that. Wow. They can be all excited. I remember all our kids when, I don't know if all, but I remember some of the kids going through the stage where they go, and they get very excited at that. And you go to a store with them, and they're sitting there going, and people are all looking, and the kid is happy. And that, to him, it's very exciting. The whole world is exciting. What do you think when you see a baby? You think life. You think future. What does the Mishnah tell us? Newborn baby is headed to death. Oh, that's how you look at a newborn. That's not what I would think. But really, the Mishnah is telling us the definition. We very often were caught up with the moment, and the Mishnah is training us to look beyond the moment, to look down the road. So you look at a baby and you think life. The Mishnah says, remember, he's headed towards death. You look at a funeral, you think death. The Mishnah says he's headed back towards life. You think life, let me enjoy life, let me live it up. And the Mishnah says there's judgment day waiting. The Mishnah is repeatedly driving home the point, you got to look beyond the moment. And this idea is an important idea in all of life. There's a fantastic theory that's been developed in the last 70 years. It's called game theory. And game theory is all about thinking about the outcome. Meaning, you start a game, if you'd only think of the outcome, then you would play the game much better. And it takes a certain wisdom. Well, you know what? The mission is telling you game theory. The mission is telling you, you look at the baby, think down the road, don't just think about now. And one of the rules in chinuch and educating our children is the importance of looking beyond the moment. You know, one parent is going to get all annoyed that the baby's doing at the store. And if you look beyond the moment, you realize they're not going to do this when they're 12. I promise you. You know, you don't have to yell at the baby. Take it easy. There's another idea here. The pasuk says, Al tiftach biyom machar, ki lo teida mayeled yom. don't have such confidence in tomorrow, because you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. But the literal translation of the pasuk is, Al tivtach biyom machar, don't have confidence in tomorrow, in the day of tomorrow. Ki lo teida, because you cannot know, ma yeled yom, what tomorrow will deliver, ma yeled, like the delivery of a child, ma yeled yom. Life is composed of many, many, many factors. And very often, a person hits a juncture in their marriage where they can be very displeased with certain things going on. And they can ask themselves, how's this ever going to change? How are we ever going to get out of this? And I think one of the rules that we see throughout the Mishnayot is that things change. The pressures of life change. The desires of life change. The expectations of life change. The influences of life change. The goals of life change. And within marriage, we have to leave room for change. And change can very often affect for the better. You have a guy who's newly married and he says, my wife is so pressured. Well, maybe she's so pressured because right now she's in a job that's very pressured. There was a guy whose life was his work and he never thought he would manage if he was ever fired. And his boss used to terrorize him. Call him up early in the morning and say, we have a new project. I want you in the office at 6:30 today. Keep him late. Yell at him. Destroyed his life. The guy was a nervous wreck. And the guy, for 20 years, he was living this life of terror. And finally, the day came when his boss fired him. And of course, he was destroyed because he never thought he could manage once he'd lose that job. And after a few months, he found another job. And this time, it was a nice boss. And this time, things were calm and normal. And suddenly he'd come home every day at 5 o'clock. And suddenly he'd come home without being yelled at, and without being terrorized, and without being called. And a few months later, he looked back and he says, I wish I was fired 20 years ago. I spent 22 years at that job being terrorized and coming home a nervous wreck and being unable to enjoy my Shabbos, being unable to enjoy my family and my kids. His wife promised he was a different person. One thing changed, and it changed a million other things. There are a lot of factors that affect who we are and how we behave. We have our personality, but it's not only that. And so the Mishnah tells us things are apt to change. The term chayim, the term life, is a term of flowing. When we speak about water that's living, that's water that's flowing. When we say maim chayim, that means water that's flowing. We have to know that life flows. Things change. Life is dynamic. And even though we don't always see the way out, we don't see how it's going to work itself out, we have to give time and have patience. Obviously, we do our best, but at the same time, we have to know there are a lot of things at play that we can't factor, that are not in our control. And very often, just when people are about to give up, things can turn for the better. So it's important to have that hope and to have that recognition that there are a lot of factors that can play in our favor. And the Mishnah tells us, you see that newborn, he's headed to death. So you say, that's a terrible Mishnah. Wow, that's depressing. Yeah, but you see the deceased, he's headed for life. Things aren't static. Even when we think they're static, even when we're focused on one aspect of life, there are other things at play. So what do you want from me if there are so many things at play? So our job is to be farmers. When the farmer throws his seed into the ground, he doesn't know, will it rain this year? He doesn't know. Will there be a fire that'll burn his crops? Will there be locusts that come and plague his crops? Will there be a bunch of birds that come and eat all his seeds? He puts up a scarecrow, he does his, he plows. And he is ma'amin v'zoreh. He believes that God's running the world, and he knows he can't control all the factors that are involved, but he puts his faith in Hashem and he throws the seed into the ground. Now, if he'd hold on to that seed, he could grind it up and have more flour. But he knows that he could have much more flour next year if he throws that seed into the ground now, and hopefully he'll have a good crop next year. He is ma'amin. He has faith in the one that runs the world, v'zoheh, and he keeps planting. And that has to be the approach to the Jewish home. You have to be ma'amin v'zoheh. You have to have faith. I'm going to keep investing my strength in it, and with time I will see the crops. Right now I don't see it. I don't even see how it's going to play itself out well. Right, you don't. But with time you'll see. The key is keep planting. The farmer initially doesn't know. The kid who looks at his father throwing the seeds into the ground, he says, "Dad, what are you doing? We could use that. We could have more flour." And his father says, "Yeah, believe me, this can give you so much more flour at the end of the year." One of the great challenges in the beginning, the first years of marriage, is that you feel like this is what is and this is the way it's always going to be. And after years of marriage, you start realizing things change. Things are dynamic. People grow. We learn to adapt to one another. It doesn't happen quickly. It happens slowly. You stand there looking at the seed you just threw into the ground. You don't see anything. But over time, suddenly it starts sprouting. Suddenly it starts growing. And eventually you have a beautiful crop. You don't build a beautiful home in a year or in 5 years. It takes time. It takes time for two people to learn one another. And with time, as people learn and adapt, it becomes more beautiful. But it takes time. The Mishnah continues and says, we have to know and make known and learn that He is the potent one and He knows everything. He created, He fashioned, He understands. We won't put you guys on the spot. But if you ask the average bachelor, what's the house he's going to build? What's the home he's going to build? What's it supposed to be like? So the average person thinks of it as his castle. In other words, he is the king. In other words, the focus of the home is his desires. And the truth is that the word bayit literally means, in Hebrew, means receptacle. Bayit means the capacity to receive. And the idea is that a bayit is limitless potential. An individual, every individual has their potential. A bayit, a home that is built, is limitless potential. But it requires investment. You won't find anything good, anything worthwhile, that can be achieved without investment. The Mishnah says we have to know Hashem is Hamevin. He understands. That means He really understands what you were thinking when you ate that last piece of chocolate. Did you really forget? Or is it just convenient to say sorry? The Mishnah says, Zachu, if a couple purified themselves, then Shechina Beinem, then Hashem's presence is between the couple. So, if every one of us is supposed to get married, and every one of us is supposed to have the Shechina in our home, that means every one of us has the capacity to attain that level. I had a friend who was a very, very fine person. And he had all kinds of questions about whether he believes, doesn't believe, is Judaism true, is it not true. And we spent about 4 or 5 years debating back and forth. And then one day I told him, look, I respect you, I like you, but I think that what's driving you is emotional, it's not intellectual. And he lay out his intellectual arguments, and I lay out my intellectual disagreements back and forth. And this went on for a period. And finally I said to him, look, I don't see a point in continuing because I've said what I said. And after what I've said, the only thing I can see that's driving you is emotion because I've answered your claims. Okay, our friendship continued. And for whatever reason, at the time, he decided his stopping to lead a religious lifestyle. So he took off the yarmulke. He, when we met, so out of respect, he put the yarmulke back on. So we met, and I asked him, I have a question. You know, you're a very fine, caring person. I've known you for the better half of a decade, and I've always seen that you care and you're kind. And do you really think that without the Torah, you're going to continue being such a caring and kind person? So he said, 100%. That's who I am, and that's what I'll continue being. So I was young, and I wanted to believe him. Within the next half hour, he disproved what he had said. As we were walking together, I could see him dropping litter on the floor. Things that he would have never thought of doing in his life. But suddenly, he wasn't living up to the standard he had lived up to earlier. And the truth is, I couldn't blame him. I've had numerous couples contact me during the course of the past decade that said they wanted to adhere to the laws of family purity. And they said they want to learn the laws, but they don't keep too much of the Torah, but that they want to keep. And I respected that. And during the course of our studies, so one of the questions I'd ask is, why do you want to keep the laws of family purity? And sometimes they'd say, well, of course, this is so critical. This is a pivotal part of the Jewish home, even though it means that there are 12, 13 days of the month that couples don't touch and that they don't pass things from hand to hand, and there are certain intrinsic difficulties, but this is a part of leading a Jewish life. Those couples did okay. Then you had couples that said, well, I keep the Torah when it's convenient for me, but this, the laws of family purity, I've read so much research about it. I know that they've done so much secular research, and that they've discovered that it is the healthiest thing for a couple. That maintaining the laws of family purity, that builds the bond between the couple, and that's the greatest thing to ensure the continuity of the couple's relationship. And you know what? I haven't yet had one couple, and maybe it's my fault, but I haven't yet had one couple that gave that reasoning that was able to live up to the laws of family purity. It became very evident from conversations afterwards that when push came to shove, they couldn't do it. There's a pivotal factor in keeping mitzvos. It's called the God factor. You know, there's a creator, he said so, and he's watching, and he cares. And that's what the Mishnah over here says. Hu ba'al din. Meaning a person can easily say, I know God gave us a Torah, 613 mitzvos, but God's above that. You really think he cares if I keep the mitzvos? Comes along the Mishnah and says, Hu ba'al din. You go to court, there's someone standing opposite you in court. Is that called a plaintiff? What's it called? I don't remember the English word for it. Ba'al din, the one you're standing opposite in court. The plaintiff. So God says, I'm not only the judge and the jury and the witness, I'm also the plaintiff. I'm also standing opposite you in court. I care. It's personal. And the people who recognize that, so then they recognize Hu atid ladun, God's still going to judge. Well, when you think of it that way, so then that could stand up to the test of desire. But when it's only mind over matter, so then you know what? Desire over mind. Desire comes first. So a normal human being has desires. And the fact that theoretically, just 2 days ago, we were discussing how important it is, and he gave me this whole lecture about all the different forms of research he read, and how it's the most pivotal thing for maintaining a relationship, and it's such a brilliant thing, and all these secular studies that back the practice of family purity, I haven't seen one. I haven't seen one, and there have been quite a few couples already. I haven't seen one that could stand up to the test of desire when it was a question of their desire versus their intellect. Yeah, theoretically, it's a very good thing, but okay, next time, right? It's like a diet. Yeah, of course it's important for me to diet. How come 99 out of 100 people don't stick to their diets? Because at the end of the day, that piece of cake looks far more enticing. Just that piece of cake, just this once, just, you know, that's the way it works, right? So the Mishnah tells us, who bowed in? Hashem says, I'm standing opposite you. What did Ladun? And he's going to judge. So again, this plays a pivotal role in the house. If we approach the house as my castle, if the house is all about my desires, I should have a place to rest, I should have a place to pick up my feet, I should have a place where they make my meals, wash my clothes, so then we're headed for disaster. But if the house is a place where the Shekhinah belongs, where God's presence exists, and God looks at the way I behave, and He's going to take me to task over it, so then my behavior is different. And again, if it's only up to my intellect, so then my intellect can justify a lot of things. What do you mean? She's getting something out of it. You know, you could justify everything. What do you mean? I'm the breadwinner, so of course I'm allowed to come home and rest. Why should I stand up and do the dishes at night? Maybe she's been having a hard day too. Yeah, but I've been having a hard day. Let her do the dishes. V'hu atid ladun. God will ultimately judge. There's a story of the Chafetz Chaim that in his town there was a person who did everything to hurt the community's life. Every time he could, he'd do things and he'd say bad things to the authorities and he'd try to get people into trouble. And everyone knew he was really an evil person. And then one day, I think it was during World War I or some other war that was going on, a bomb fell on his house and destroyed everything completely. So the Chafetz Chaim said, "Hu atid ladun." I don't know if he quoted this Mishnah. He said, "I was always waiting. I know God ultimately judges. But Hashem gives us a chance. He doesn't judge right away. Hu atid ladun. He will ultimately judge. He doesn't judge us on the moment. You don't see that when a person sins, you know, he takes a piece of pork and lightning strikes and then boom. Doesn't happen. I haven't seen it happen, right? There was an interesting story here in Israel. There were a group of people who decided on Yom Kippur to go bike riding, to go with their motorcycles. And one of them was, he did stunts. And he'd always leap between two cliffs. And that Yom Kippur, his motorcycle didn't land on the top of the other cliff. It did Sir Lazazel, hit the cliff midway. And it was, I heard this... from a friend of his. I wasn't there. I was in Shul Yom Kippur. But these were two cliffs that he... It was a standard by him to leap from one side to the other. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes. But usually the Mishnah says, "Hu atid ladun." Ultimately Hashem judges. It doesn't happen at that moment. And that's something to think about. You walk into the house and... you see that there's a bucket with water to wash the floor, you know, full bucket, dirty soap water, sitting on top of your laptop. So you have a lot to say at that moment. You know, you see that scene and you're thinking, no place else to put the bucket. Didn't I tell her 1,000 times not to put things on my laptop? Doesn't she know that all of my work is in that laptop? Doesn't she know that water can destroy the laptop? And you're standing there and all you see is that scene. Bucket, filthy water, laptop. And you see red. And you have a lot to say. Comes the Mishnah and says, you know, Hashem sees us without seeing a segment of the scene. Hashem sees the full picture. And Hashem sees what we've done wrong. And He waits. He doesn't react right away. Hu atid ladun. It's a beautiful thing that Hashem doesn't judge us right away. He gives us time. Maybe if you'd see the whole picture, you'd see the snake crawling into the house, and your wife with the bucket in her hand, and she has to run and grab the baby, and maybe there's a whole scene you didn't see. Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe she did put that bucket with soap water on your laptop and she was so busy she didn't realize that your laptop was there. Yeah, maybe we also do things like that, that our wife begged us 1,000 times not to do, and we do them again. Like putting our dirty socks next to the bed. Like forgetting to throw out the floss after we used it. Like forgetting where we're supposed to push the toothpaste thing from, the toothpaste tube. Like eating an apple as we're working on the computer and leaving the core half eaten next to the keyboard. You know, maybe. Like sitting and talking to her as we pick at our toenails or other things. Yeah, maybe there are things that our wife also told us that, you know, shouldn't be doing. Bothers her. And somehow we forgot conveniently. V'u'atid ladun. God's ultimately judges us. He doesn't judge us right away. He gives us a chance. Baruch Hu. Blessed is he she'en lefanav lo asha ve'lo shikha ve'lo masopanim. God judges fairly. God doesn't play favorites. And he owns everything. But you should know that everything is done with a cheshbon. There's an accounting. Now sometimes a person says, I'll get away with it. So the Mishnah warns us, you didn't get away with anything else. No one asked you when it came time to be created. There's a beautiful medrash. We learned it on Hoshana Rabbah a year or two ago. There's a medrash about what happens when it's time for the soul to come down to earth. So there's an angel responsible for that soul, brings it, that soul from a special room in heaven where all the souls are kept, and brings the soul before God. And then there's a conversation that takes place between God and the soul. And God asks the soul, do you want to go down? And the soul looks down and says, no, rather not. And God says, there are good things down there. And then there's a conversation. God says, you could do mitzvos. And the soul says, yeah, but I could do averos. And God says, but there's so much merit waiting for you. And the soul says, yeah, but there's so much potential for falling, for destroying down there. And back and forth. And finally, bottom line, the soul says, I'm not interested. And God says, well, who asked you anyways? And throws the soul down into the body. Every soul has this conversation where there's a whole conversation back and forth. And finally, God says, you're going anyways, says the Mishnah. Al kolchacha ata notzav. The first stage of the soul entering and the body taking shape, you have the zygote, you have the cells expanding, all of that happened and no one asked you. Oh yeah, they asked you, but your answer didn't matter too much. So that's point number one. And then Chazal say when it comes time to be born, so the baby fights like crazy, he doesn't want to leave the womb. He says, what do I have to go out there for? What kind of world am I going into? Leave me in here. And then there are contractions. There's a fight. God created the body that the mother evicts the tenant. Get out. Out. And the baby comes out yelling. The baby comes out screaming. He's not happy to be in this world. He knows what he's in for. Al kochachata nolat. Mishnah says, you're born, no one asked you. Now fend for yourself. Al kochachata chai. Sometimes a person wishes he wouldn't wake up in the morning and lo and behold, he's there. No one asks us. And so the Mishnah reminds us that Hashem invested a lot in putting us here. And it wasn't our choice that got us here. So then let's ask ourselves, why? And the answer is one of the most pivotal points in Jewish life. And that is the beautiful and amazing potential that each of us have. If we were forced down here, then obviously we're part of a pretty big plan. And there must be a lot of potential in each of us because Hashem really forced us into this role. The soul was asked, she said no, and she was thrown down here. The baby was asked, he said no, and he was kicked out. The man was asked, and you know what? The maskana, the conclusion of the Talmud is we'd be much better off if we never came. Would have been much better off if we wouldn't have been born. Yeah, the Talmud has a discussion. What's better philosophically? Is it better to have been born or to be dead or to never have come? And the Talmud's conclusion is better off never having come. Once you're here, make the best of it. But we can take it one step further. If you're here,
then obviously there's a purpose, there's a mission, and there's a mission that only you can perform. Because if you weren't needed, then why go to all that trouble? A whole world was created because of your potential. All the galaxies, all the animals, all the plants, all the science, all of that is there because God wanted the human being to accomplish something in each and every one of us. And this is one of the most pivotal points in the performance of mission, of mitzvos. A person has to remember that we are here to make a difference. And no one else can accomplish what each of us can accomplish. We were each given a unique set of strengths, and when we discuss our accomplishments, it is us as a complete human being with our partner, with our wives. A person is born half a human being. You're only half yourself until you find your other half. The verse says in Bereishis, Adam looks at Eve and he says, "Ooh, you are Isha." He names her. You are Isha, what we would translate as woman. Ki me'ish lukach hazot. Because you were taken from Ish. I am Ish. I am male. You are Isha. You are female. Why are you called Isha? Because you are a derivative of Ish. Okay, man and woman. Fine. I don't know what wo means, but I don't either know what Isha means. Ah, from the womb. Very nice. Okay. What does the next verse say? Ah, I thought you knew what you were talking about. Okay.
That's woe unto men.
Woe. What's up?
So we have this pasuk where Adam awakens and he sees this creature next to him, a female, and he looks at her and he says, Adam says, Etzem me'atzamai. Her bones come from my bone. Uvasar mi'bisari, and her flesh comes from my flesh. Lezot ikarei isha. This should be called Isha. Kimeish lukachazot, for this was taken from Ish, from man. End of Adam's talking. Let's shift to the Torah talking. Next pasuk says the Torah, Al ken yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo. Therefore, man leaves his father and mother, v'davak b'ishto v'ayur v'sar echad, and he glues with his wife, and they become one flesh. That's the connection. What's the connection? Well, ordinarily a human being would say, you know, they're my flesh and blood, my mom and dad. My wife, she's a perfect stranger. Yeah, I married her. Could have married anyone else. Along comes the Torah and says, no, your flesh and blood is your wife. Al ken yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo. Therefore, every man must leave his father and mother. You think there your flesh and blood, comes the Torah and says, no, you leave them, v'davak b'ishto, and glue to your wife, v'ayul v'sar echad, and you become one flesh, because by each and every one of us, there's the continuation of that declaration of Adam, etzem me'atzamai uv'sar mi'bisari, she is in fact an extension of your own bones and your own flesh. Not the way you might think. She doesn't share your DNA, right? I got my DNA from them. Come on, don't you know? This hair, this bald spot, it's all from them, right? Mm-hmm. No, comes the Torah and says, no. It's a matzamai v'sami b'sari. So, if we have this important role in this world, we have to know that's an important role that's to be realized as a whole human being, together with our partner. And together, we were put here to accomplish something. And so the Mishnah says, blessed is the one that created the world this way. He's going to judge us fairly, and he has great expectations for us, because look at how much he invested in us. And ultimately, he will bring us to task. And that's the that balance, the realization at the end of the day that there are expectations and there is a judgment day, which is the continued stress of the Mishnah. From three different angles, the Mishnah keeps reminding us. There is a judgment day, there are expectations, and we have to live up to them. It's not just, if you want to, it'll be a nice thing. No, it's our responsibility. That's what we're here for. Whenever I'd have a difficult day in yeshiva, I had a fantastic roommate who used to tell me the following line. He used to say, you think accomplishing something is easy? If you wanted an easy life, you should have climbed a tree naked and eaten a banana. He meant that's what monkeys are for. Their job is to peel bananas. You're not in a tree peeling bananas, right? You were given the intellect to get dressed and accomplish, and that's your responsibility. You'll tell me, but it's hard. It's not easy. Right? Right? Because you have potential, that's why it's hard. We shouldn't be frustrated by the hardships. We should realize that's because we have potential. Because we have responsibility. That's why we're given these hardships. The greater the hardships, then obviously the greater the strengths we were given to accomplish.